Australian support to the people of Ukraine in the struggle that they're having against the brutal Russian invasion that has implications for the rules-based international order, but also, of course, is having an impact on Australians with rising energy prices, rising inflation, impact on supply chains, including on food.
From Brisbane, Australia, Adam Devlin on Bondi Tunes International.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners in Australia and New Zealand on FM. Adam Devlin? I got to get that right. It's not Rachel Bernstein. Oh, hang on. Adam Devlin is our Australian political correspondent, and he joins me now from Brisbane. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hi, Henry. Hello, listeners.
How could I screw that up? You know, I'm like British television. British television does that with Rachel Bernstein. We were talking off air, actually. Yesterday, as we record, was your 16th anniversary with your LSB.
Yes.
Long...
Yes.
Suffering
boy.
Boyfriend. And you had a quiet dinner. Is this a sign of the times? Is this a sign of age? Or, because I'm sure you would have gone out to nightclubs in the past, Adam Devlin.
How very dare you suggest I'm getting old. No, look, it was a simple case of he's in a recently new job, so we couldn't go out on a Monday night and have a big night out.
True.
Because he needed to be, you know, clear of eyed and bushy of eared for the next day.
Yes, yes.
Plus, it's freezing cold up here in Brisbane at the moment. Now I know people are going to laugh at that.
Go on, tell us the temperature.
At the moment, it's 12 degrees.
For Brisbane, and now, if you're listening in Europe, you'll think that's a joke, a walk in the park. But people in Brisbane, Adam, they normally have pretty hot weather in the middle of winter, don't they?
Normally, you know, a cold day up here would be sort of 17. Degrees. And it's now 13 degrees,
and that's in winter, we should remind our audience in Europe.
Yes, and it's rained constantly for the last 2 days. Nothing like you're getting down in Sydney.
I know. We will talk about that in a minute. I've been with the LSG, as in long serving girlfriend, for 28 years. I just want to ask you, because we were talking about this off air yesterday, young people are getting married more than ever now.
I
sort of get the feeling a lot of them are doing it for social media reasons, to get likes. And, you know, I mentioned to you that they had this thing up in the air, a drone, you know, taking video of the wedding. And it's such a big deal. And, you know, I sort of felt that, you know, we know the facts that 50% of people who get married are going to get divorced, although I wouldn't dare say that to them. But do you think that social media has got a lot to do with this, or am I just making a beat up of this?
No, I think it has got a fair bit to do with it, Henry. I think there's a lot of pressure on young people to do the big wedding now and to get it up online. And you know, because it's so easy to share this stuff now. And it's expected now that you're going to get married. And when you do get married, you're going to have, you know, the drones with the video and the special effects and the lighting and the... And you know, what amazes me is, you know, I'm not married and I doubt I'll ever will get married, but if I do, it certainly won't be anything like that. But I just can't imagine the cost of all of this. You know, especially for young people, if they're just starting out in their lives together, you know, I'd much rather put that $30,000 to $50,000 or more sometimes into a home than into an afternoon drinking and debauchery.
Yes, you did say to me, if you ever did get married, it would be a very, you know, you mentioned that you're probably not going to do this, but if you did get married, you wouldn't tell anyone, just have a barbecue and they'd arrive.
Yeah, we would just go off to the registry office with, you know,
drag
somebody in off the street as a witness and just hold a barbecue a little bit after that. And, you know, midway through the barbecue, oh, by the way, we're now married.
I would love to go to a party like that and bring your own booze, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. This is just a bar. We're just having a barbie. So bring your meat, bring your booze. We'll put some salads and other stuff on. And, you know, let's all catch up. And then, you know, midway through, oh, by the way, this is our wedding reception.
I just love that. I mean, instead of 30 to 50K on your wedding, it's more like salad, let me think, $1.50. Because they're bringing them in.
It'd be $3 now, considering the price of lettuce.
Oh, that is a good point. A very good point indeed.
Actually, it might be cheaper to have the reception now.
Yeah, let's think about that one. Okay, you mentioned floods in along the eastern seaboard of Australia, particularly New South Wales, and even out, you know, out in outskirts of Sydney. It's pretty serious stuff. Our Prime Minister Albanese, Anthony Albanese, has been in Europe, of course, and even in Ukraine. He came back and did a press conference at Perth Airport, and yeah, he had a lot of people. Obviously, the opposition Liberal Party are, you know, kind of do a trick with him to get him back for the previous Prime Minister going on holidays with his family to Hawaii during the massive fires in Australia 3 years ago. Did that go down well for the opposition Liberal Party?
No, not well, no. I mean, the it was an absurd attempt from the Liberal Party to try and smear Albanese as having done exactly the same thing that Morrison did during the bushfires of 2019. Now, I'll just give a very quick refresh of what happened with Morrison and the bushfires.
Yeah, sure.
The fires started, they were burning, they were out of control. And then all of a sudden, Morrison, the former Prime Minister Morrison, vanished from the scene. And for days, we hadn't seen him. He hadn't given a press conference. He hadn't responded to anyone over anything. And then it started to leak in the press that he'd taken his family to Hawaii for a holiday. Hmm. Now, the Liberal Party was asked this question, and their response was, no, he's in the country. He is taking a short break, but he is in the country and he is being briefed and he is working with us through this. But he's definitely in the country. Now, he has not gone to Hawaii. The next day, the very next day after that, a photograph appeared on social media of him and three tourists on the beach in Hawaii.
didn't he have his family in some of those pictures?
Yes. The initial one, it was just him and these three other people.
Right.
But then some people just started to do some digging. The journalists, of course, jumped, you know, onto their associates in Hawaii and said, get photos, please.
Brilliant.
And so then all of a sudden, a string of photos appeared of him and his wife and his children in Hawaii. And so he was left with no option but to announce that, yes, he was in Hawaii on holiday. He had cancelled his holiday and he would be home as soon as possible, as soon as practicable. Mm. Now, that took 2 days for him to leave Hawaii. Yeah. And when he left Hawaii, he needed to go into 7 days quarantine when he got home. So he flew home, it took him 2 days to leave Hawaii, got back to Australia, went into 7 days quarantine, did nothing during that time, essentially nothing. The whole time, the country was calling out for the military to be called in to help people in the fires.
Mm.
And none of that happened until he came out of quarantine 9 days after it was discovered that he was in Hawaii. And then he announced that he was sending the military in. When asked why he didn't do this sooner,
he wasn't there.
And huffed and puffed and, you know, made a whole series of reasons. But the truth of the matter is, Henry, that he didn't do anything at the time because he couldn't, and now he couldn't hold a press conference because he was in isolation for COVID because he'd been overseas. So, and he wanted to get the photo ops and the media buzz of him announcing sending the military in. So he waited 9 days before doing anything so that he could get a photo op.
Days is a long time, Adam.
There were, you know, hundreds of people died in that period of
time.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, so now compare that to what the Albanese situation at the moment. Now, these floods have been going for 3 days.
Yeah. I would like to just proffer that these floods, this is the fourth time of flooding. It's just the latest one.
But this flood is only 3 days old.
Mm.
The flood season's a bit longer than that, but this particular flood is 3 days old. Yeah. He's been overseas for a week.
Yeah.
So he left the country before the flood started. So there's the first difference. Morrison left the country mid-disaster.
While the country was on fire, yeah.
Albanese left before the disaster. Mm. Morrison was on holiday and lied about it. Albanese was meeting with NATO, meeting with France, and went to the Ukraine to meet with the president of Ukraine. Now, he needed to meet with France, he needed to meet with NATO, because Australia's reputation in Europe is trashed by the previous government.
Especially France.
especially France. So yes. He needed to go there in person to try and resurrect this relationship, because France and Australia are probably the two main superpowers in the South Pacific at the moment.
Mm.
And so we need to be on the same page here. And we weren't, and we hadn't been for nearly a decade because of the prior government. So it was really important that he go and do that. Now, he was over there doing that when these floods hit. Now, did he wait until he got back to Australia to be able to announce that the military was going in? No. Did he hold a press conference over there and say, I'm sending the military in? No, he didn't. What he did was he just advised the military to go in and do what needed to be done, help where help was needed, and then just simply said the military's been engaged. He didn't worry about a photo op. He didn't worry about the optics of how all of this is. It was just the military's needed. Get them in there.
I just want to, if you've just joined us, I'm talking with Adam Devlin, our political correspondent in Brisbane here in Australia, and I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia. The media in this country is 80% conservative, if you like, right-leaning.
Yes.
It wasn't just the opposition Liberal Party attacking him. It was also the media. Now, I just want to play an audio clip of our Prime Minister defending going away during the floods. Take a listen.
There's been criticism over the international travel you've done. Have you managed to strike the right balance between overseas and domestic priorities?
Well, I have attended the Quad Leaders meeting the day after the election. That wasn't a decision of mine to hold the election on May 21. That was a decision of the former Prime Minister. I attended that. I attended the NATO summit, which was important that Australia be represented there. It was important that we deal with the relationship with France and Europe. And I believe that my visit to Ukraine was important to show solidarity with the people of Ukraine. We can't separate international events from the impact on Australia and Australians. And for those people might like to say which of the events that I've attended on behalf of Australia that I shouldn't have attended. I have not had a day off for a very long period of time.
Nonetheless, Prime Minister, you are copping some criticism. Were you, in hindsight, too harsh on Scott Morrison for supposedly going missing? Even there was criticism when he had COVID of him not being at the floods from people in Labor. Have you made a rod for your own back now in terms of expectations of a Prime Minister in terms of national crisis?
People want to argue I'm not working hard. Then they can argue that case.
Now, the media have a lot to answer for all the time in Australia. It's true to say, isn't it?
Mm, absolutely. We, the recent election campaign we went through in May really was a watershed moment for me in regards to our media. It just really did show that our media has fallen away. The quality of our media in this country really has fallen away of late.
And Adam Devlin, Murdoch did not get his way because, of course, he runs the right-wing Sky News Australia, which is more right-wing than Sky News Britain, if you're listening in Britain.
Yeah.
And he was really pissed off that he didn't get his way with this election, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Livid.
Maybe that's why he divorced Jerry Hall. He's pissed off.
Yeah. Look, the only thing Murdoch hates is to lose.
Yes.
In anything in life. So it's the fact that he couldn't persuade Australia to vote Liberal in this last election really, shook him.
Yes.
And he's like a spawned lover. He's now bitter.
He's a bitter,
bitter towards the government.
A bitter old 91-year-old man. I mean, really.
Yeah.
really. And, you know, we talked about him last week. He's 91. He's divorcing her. And I'm thinking, is he going to get another girlfriend at 91? What's going to go on there? Why did he do this? Well, he's annoyed at something she did, but I don't know what it was. Anyway. We definitely do digress yes. there.
That's a whole different session we can have with Rachel.
Yeah, that's true.
And that probably,
just to explain to our listeners, Rachel has been appearing on British television, Murdoch owned, by the way, I found out, on Talk TV in the UK, and the presenter just couldn't get her name right in two different broadcasts. Her name is Rachel Brunson. They kept on calling her Rachel Bernstein. But anyway, so where do we go from here? He's back. He talked in Perth Airport. You just heard an audio grab of that. I want to talk about the floods now, in particular in New South Wales, because just to give our listeners some details on this, Windsor is kind of an outer suburb of Sydney, where I am, and the Windsor floods are the worst in 44 years. 32,000 people, I think, in New South Wales. It could be in Queensland as well. I don't know. 32,000 people have been forced to leave their homes on the east coast of this country, Adam.
Yeah, that's just in the Hunter and Sydney area.
Oh, it's not even the whole of New South Wales?
No.
Jeez.
No, it's not.
Oh, my God. How heartbreaking.
Absolutely. It's staggering. The amount of water that is falling is just ridiculous. More than half a metre of rain has drenched parts of New South Wales in the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
And half a metre.
I know. I can't get my head around that. And you know,
they normally measure rain in millimetres.
I know. They have to do it in metres now, or half a metre. I mean, I'm on Bondi Beach, which is actually at sea level, which intrigues me because we obviously live on a beach and it is sea level. But we don't get that kind of floods. And I can't get my head around that. Because we are the lowest lying area that you can be on a beach. But my garden was turning into a bit of a swimming pool, but nothing really that big a deal.
Two main issues that are exasperating this flood. The first one is that all of the dams and catchment areas are completely full before this flood came.
Warragamba for Sydney, I was there 6 months ago, the first flood started, I saw it.
Warragamba's got is at its peak of 515 gigalitres. Sorry, no. At 515 gigalitres of water are flooding over its walls at the moment.
Yeah.
Now, the other issue we've got is the paddocks, the rain, the dirt, the earth is completely sodden with water. It can't absorb any more water because of the previous floods. So this water, half a metre of rain that's fallen on Sydney in the last day has got nowhere to go. It just floods. So it just pools and eventually works its way to the lowest point, which is the ocean. So that's why these floods are so much worse than the previous three that we've had this year. July.
It's also faster. You know, this all happened much faster. And I just want to...
And that is because, Henry, there is nowhere for the water to... The water's not being absorbed by the ground, and the dams are all full. So any more rain that comes now is just going to end up on the ground, pooling, flooding.
It's just horrific. I just feel so sorry for these people, particularly in Lismore, which is a town in New South Wales. And these people have had, like, four floods since Christmas. And the minute they refurbish their kitchens, for an example, now they have to refurbish their kitchens again. Some have lost their houses. And at the moment, so many people are being told to leave their houses. It must be heartbreaking.
I can't imagine the anxiety, the stress, the heartbreak that it would go through. And of course, with this being the fourth flood this year, if these people can get insurance, they can't afford it.
Well, they can't get insurance, a lot of them.
That's it. Those that most can't now get insurance. Those who can get it, it's so expensive that they can't afford it.
No. And the thing is, you know, they're being told, well, why don't you just leave go somewhere else, go to higher ground. But some of these people are living in their family home, which, they, you know, their family has owned for over 100 years. It must be very difficult to leave.
Although, well, not only that, only the fact that it's been in the home, the family home for so long, but these houses are now worthless, so they can't sell them.
No, who the hell is going to buy them?
So where do they go? How, what do they buy a new house with? And their asset, their main asset, and let's face it, in Australia, the average family's main and usually only asset is their family home.
Yeah.
So if they can't, if they're all of a sudden their home is worthless and they can't be sold,
they don't got no money.
What happens to these people?
They've got no money. And a lot of them are elderly. You see, a lot of these people are, you know, it's sort of, we've talked about, you know, recent times people are leaving the big cities because of COVID and buying places in rural places like Lismore. I bet not Lismore at this point, but you know what I'm saying. Generally, these small towns, and I've lived in some of them and you come from one of them, there's a big elderly percentage of population in these small towns. And these people, they're on pensions.
They're not affluent areas.
They're not affluent areas, and they don't, they're on pensions. They don't have any money, and as you say, they can't sell their house because it's not worth anything, so they can't buy another one.
They're caught in a classic catch-22. If they stay there, they're going to keep getting flooded. They're going to keep having to be rescued. They're going to have to keep buying new stuff all the time. But so they have to leave, but they've got no money to leave. I don't know how we solve that problem.
You know, talking about these floods, I guess... Oh, actually, I just want to play another audio grab from our Prime Minister Albanese at Perth Airport talking about these floods. Take a listen.
People on the East Coast are doing it really tough at the moment, and it is clear that the crisis is not over yet. We see, I'm advised that the rains are heading towards Hunter and the mid-north coast today. They are hoped to be easing in coming days, but there will continue to be flash flooding, and the advice remains, if it's flooding, forget it. Do not take risks. At the moment, we have 9 evacuation centres open. There are some 242 people have registered at those evacuation centres. We have made 250 ADF personnel available, 100 of whom are on the ground at the moment, 100 are on standby, and 50 are there to support a clean-up in areas once that commences.
Okay, now, Albanese took on a big job when he became Prime Minister. I mean, he's done so much. He's been overseas, and he's just really achieved so much in a short period of time. Do you think that the people of Australia will believe him? You know, he played the grab of him defending himself. What do you think the population of Australia who have voted him into power at whatever it was, 56 points he needed? What do you think they...
7 seats.
Yep, that's it. What do you think the people of Australia think?
Look, the people of Australia, I think most of the people of Australia are sensible enough to realise that this is a new government. The government hasn't even sat yet in Parliament. So the government hasn't really made any changes to anything at the moment. All we're dealing with at the moment is the consequences of the previous government. And your reasonable, sensible Australian understands that. Of course, there's a very small number of people who watch things like Sky News, and are influenced by people like Alan Jones and Ben Fordham and such.
They fired him from Sky News Australia. And I think he's resigned from 2GB, which is an ultra-right-wing AM radio station in Australia.
You know, people who listen to those people and believe what these believe the ridiculousness that these people say, you know, they're condemning. Albanese already. I had a bit of a rant on Facebook today because I just had a few comments from people saying, well, you know, aren't you being a bit hypocritical because you condemned Morrison so much when he was overseas and now you're not condemning Albanese? And isn't it exactly the same thing?
And no.
I was like, how are you people coming up with that this is the same thing? And then, of course, I went and had a look at the far right-wing media, and the far right-wing media is saying it was the same thing.
Yeah, and also you've just explained all this to us in this broadcast that we're doing. There's a difference, but the problem is you got what a friend of mine calls rusted-on people. They're rusted-on to Sky News. Very similar to Fox News in America. These people, a lot of them are actually over 50, and they're just rusted-on. And, you know, Sky News Australia, as I said earlier, is more right-wing than Sky News UK, but and less right-wing than Fox News America, but they're all owned by bloody Murdoch.
They're all tarred with the same brush.
They really are, and it's interesting.
It's just they tar America first, then Australia, and what's left goes to Britain.
Yes. I mean, it's just interesting that people can just stick with Sky News all day. And by the way, the ABC News service, ABC News on television, has two-thirds more listeners than Sky News Australia because it's on a paid channel. Although, here's an interesting fun fact, Adam Devlin. Sky News Australia broadcasts on free-to-air if you're not in the big cities. Because a friend of mine moved to the country. He said, what the hell?
Yes.
So you know what's going on with that, yeah?
Yeah, it was a deal done by the previous government where they, instead of the ABC providing regional TV coverage, which it had done ever since the ABC has been set up, which is 90 years ago.
Yes, happy birthday, ABC.
Yes, they did a deal with Sky News that Sky News would go free to air in the regions instead of the ABC. Now, we all know why that is, because the Sky News is far right leaning, and it was government.
Did you just say instead of the ABC?
Yes.
What, you're saying that people can't watch ABC News TV in rural areas?
In the rural areas where it's done by satellite, where the government provides the satellite to provide that service to them, they got the ABC, that was it. Now they get Sky News, and that's it.
That is a disgrace.
Yes. Now, the worm, though, Henry, is slowly starting to turn. Last week, it was Qantas announced that they have, for some time, aired Sky News in their lounges in airports around the country. They've now scrapped that and are now going to show the ABC News channel.
Well, that's good to know. I'm sure.
So some small changes are starting to happen.
Yeah.
And given the first opportunity, I don't know how long the contract with Sky News is for them to provide this news service via satellite into the regions, but I'm pretty certain that if that contract comes up for renewal while a Labor government is in power, it will not be renewed.
No, I presume that, you know, Anthony Albanese and his cabinet, they must do something about this, and I'm sure they want to, but we must find out when that changes, that contract, because that's so important. I mean, the national broadcaster, the ABC, they really are amazing. They've got emergency services on every level. On radio, there's a service called ABC Emergency. Mm. Online, everywhere. Sky News couldn't give a toss about some of these things, you know?
Especially if you live in a Labour seat.
Well, yes.
Burn, we don't care.
That's right.
Faces west, long diagonals and slope into
Australia, Henry O'Donovan on Bond iTunes International.
You just joined us. I'm Henry for Bond iTunes International in Sydney, Australia, and I'm with Adam Devlin in Brisbane. He's our Australian political correspondent. Adam, I just turned 60 last weekend, as you know. And I,
yes, happy birthday, by the way, again.
Thanks very much. I just wonder, and this is really hard for me to say, in 10 years I'm going to be 70. I just wonder what's going to happen in 10 years' time in this country. And I just want to just talk a little more about climate change and how it's increased so much in just 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, and now I'm talking 10 years, you know, from this year, 2022, so 2032. What do you envisage this country will look like, being one of the, actually, it's classed as the hottest country on Earth. Forget India. Australia is classed as the hottest country on Earth.
Look, I can't see this getting any better anytime soon. We have to, as a planet, cease putting carbon emissions into the atmosphere. And I'm not saying reducing them. We have to stop doing it. And we have to stop doing it now. And that isn't happening. We're still increasing our carbon emissions into the atmosphere here in Australia. We're the second highest per capita emitters on the planet. And the way we're going, it won't be long and we'll be the highest emitting per capita carbon emissions on the planet in this country. The Albanese government are proceeding with opening new coal mines, which contribute to carbon emissions, which contribute to climate change. So if we want to hold it at what it's happening now, so this massive extreme of floods and fires and massive storms, if we, they're here for now for good. You and I won't see a period of time where this isn't happening.
Of course,
there'll be times when it's not flooding or raining, but the frequency of these floods and rains, the frequency that we're getting them now at, that's the new normal.
I just want to talk about La Nina for a second because it's sweeping the east coast of Australia for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
La Nina has been here as long as COVID. It almost happened at an identical time, which is really bizarre, but it did. And we've had nothing but rain and floods right down the east coast, including in Queensland and obviously New South Wales and Sydney, and it's going on today as we speak. It's pouring rain outside. The thing is, you see, I'm confused about this because we've got two things going on here at the same time. We've got La Nina and we've got climate change. But does climate change cause La Nina?
It's by climate change.
Okay, you were both saying the same thing at the same time.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me. And if so, if, you know, they keep saying on mainstream media that La Nina's over, but it's not. And it's obviously due to climate change.
Yeah. What they're saying is it's over for now. And these things are cyclical in nature. Mm. They come and go.
Yes.
But what's happening is the frequency of them happening is increasing remarkably.
Yes.
Like the fact we've had four floods this year in Australia that are one in a generational flood, and we've had four of them this year.
That's crazy, isn't it?
And so this, what we've got now, what we're experiencing now, of course it won't rain in like it is in Sydney permanently forever from now on. Of course, that's not what I'm saying.
No.
But it will, the frequency of these floods and storms will increase and the intensity of them will continue to increase. There's no going back to what it was 10 years ago. That ship has sailed. So even if we somehow across the planet stopped right now emitting carbon emissions and never emitted another carbon emission into the atmosphere, we're stuck with what we've got now for the rest of our lives, at least.
I asked you about 10 years' time. You talked about, you're talking about 10 years ago. I'm talking about 10 years into the future. I mean, I find it frightening.
In 10 years' time, when we aren't stopping, we haven't stopped emitting carbon into the atmosphere, and we're not going to stop doing that until 2050.
It's going to be too late. You know, I just can't understand why they're talking about this stuff that's got to be completed by 2050. Jesus. We could be done by, you know, 2032.
What's my one glimmer of hope, Henry, is nothing convinces a government to do something more than it costing if you don't do it. So
I see.
But the governments now, this year, have that our budget, our federal budget, our state government budgets have all been whacked with a massive impost because of natural disasters that are all climate related. And so now, and this is going to happen each and every year. Of course, the amount will vary up and down depending on the seasons and things like El Nino and stuff like that. But basically, the billions of dollars that we have spent so far this year already, and we're only in July, and we're still mid-disaster in New South Wales, and there will be other disasters elsewhere throughout the rest of the country for the rest of the year, you know, the costs of this are going to become almost an annual cost.
My mother said that it's all about money. You know, where anything went wrong, she said it's all about money. And she just kept saying that stuff. And I was very young at the time. I thought, yeah, as I got older, I realized it's all about money. Money talks.
And let's not forget that one of the biggest donators to the Liberal and National parties in this country and to the Labor Party is the fossil fuels industry.
So how does it work with the Labor?
And the federal government is still giving this year $16 billion in tax offsets and rebates to the fossil fuel industry.
So
now, if we were serious about this, those rebates would be stopped immediately. And we would put a tax on carbon emissions. Carbon emitted by any means in this country should be taxed. It should be taxed globally. The only way to stop something from happening is to tax it out of existence.
Yeah, that's interesting. But they didn't quite tax tobacco out of existence. But, you know...
No, but it has dropped a lot.
Oh, yes. The number of... We were talking about that last week, of course. Vaping and smoking and all that sort of stuff. But, what you're saying is money talks. I mean, that's the bottom line, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the reason this... No action has been taken on this, no realistic action has been taken on this, is because the industry, the fossil fuels industry, doesn't want it to happen because they know that when it does, it's the end of them.
But we talked about, you know, these coal-fired power stations the week before last, I think. And but they were asking the government, you know, to, I think you were saying that the government was to get on with renewals because they're all closing down. So the fossil fuels industry, is that a different thing?
No, it's the same thing. But, you know, what's happened is our coal-fired electricity stations right around this country have been allowed to sit there and deteriorate to the point where they are now have to be shut down early because there hasn't had been sufficient maintenance done on them and they are no longer efficient to run and they're not safe to run. And so, you know, we've got coal-powered fire stations.
You always have that problem.
I know. <it's...
laughs> You need to write it down, Adam.
We've got coal-powered fire stations.
There you go.
We've got those coal-powered
things. No, it's coal-fired
electricity
powered
stations.
I don't know.
We go.
I think
it's the word
understand.
Fire. I keep tricking on the word fire.
Yes.
These coal-powered electricity stations, if they had been well maintained, if the industry had have put money into developing newer, more efficient, more cleaner coal electricity stations, then we wouldn't be in this situation. But the industry didn't do that because the industry was giving all this money to the government and they thought the government would do it on their behalf, that the government would build new power stations.
But the government
because here's the rub, Henry.
Yes.
The industry knows that coal's on its way out.
Yes.
So the last thing they want to do is invest hundreds of millions of dollars in building a brand new coal-powered electricity station because they know they're not going to get their money back on it because it's only going to be operating for a short period of time until they know that coal won't be used anymore. And so they've basically been blackmailing the government and saying, if you don't build new power stations for us to use, then your country's going to have these problems with electricity shortages, huge increases in prices, and power outages. So, and the government has said, an arm denied. And we had 9 years of the government going, we don't know what to do, we don't know what to do.
And Adam, it was a Liberal government, and of course that was going to happen anyway, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. But we've cooked the planet. Like, let's be honest here. Let's call a duck a duck.
Yeah.
The planet's done. You and I don't have children, but if we did, our grandchildren would still be living with the consequences of what we've done to our planet.
Even our children, because, you know, you're 56, I think, I'm not sure.
Yes.
I'm 60. And, you know, at this point, it's funny, I was saying to you at the beginning of this broadcast, I know a child who was born the day you met your long-suffering boyfriend.
Yes.
And she's 16. And the thing is, if we had had children, they'd be probably in their 20s. You know what I'm saying? And they can still suffer terribly. Never mind the grandchildren, like our grandchildren, if we have them. But the actual children in their 30s trying to bring up small children would suffer equally.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You know,
I couldn't imagine bringing a child into this world we're living in at the moment.
Yet people keep doing it.
I know. Like, it just terrifies me. But honestly, and I don't mean to be pessimistic with this, Henry, but I cannot see the environment or the climate getting any better in our lifetimes.
No, you know, I'm a realist, and I think you are too. And we've been talking about this for 13 years here on Bondi Tunes.
Yeah.
The government should have listened to us, Adam Devlin.
Well, they should have. Or they could have been listening to the scientists any time for the last 35 years. Science has been saying this is going to happen.
Yes, and, you know, they've been saying that since the 60s, actually, as far as I understand. I mean, we had time to fix it back then, you know? And now we're doing...
Not only did we have time, but we had the technology, we had everything. We are in a situation of our own making that was completely and utterly avoidable.
Yeah. Okay. If you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International in Sydney, Australia, on Bondi Beach. Adam Devlin is our Australian correspondent. He's our political correspondent in Brisbane, in Queensland. Finally, I want to talk about interest rates. Now, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. As you know, as you said, you have multiple properties. Well, the thing is...
I don't think I said it like that.
No. Look, the thing is, yes. I've got, you know, we've got two properties. My long-suffering girlfriend has interests in two other properties. A lot of people think, oh, well, you're not poor. It's not true. We just decided to put our money into property. And I think that was a smart move. We are not rich. And now the RBA has lifted official cash rate by 50 basis points to 1.35%.
Yes.
Tell me about your response to that, given that you also own property.
Look, it was pretty much inevitable to happen. Inflation is running at about 7% at the moment in Australia. The Reserve Bank has been tasked with keeping it between 2 to 3%.
Mm.
And it's now at 7. So they have to do something to try and get that back down. Now, there are many reasons causing this inflation. Mm. One of them is the war in Ukraine having a massive impact on fuel costs right around the world.
Yes.
You know, everyone would be aware that, you know, petrol at the moment here is, well, here in Brisbane at the moment, it's about $2.15 to $2.20 a litre.
It's $2.80 in Sydney on average price. So that's dreadful for people who need to use their cars all the time, of course.
Absolutely. I mean, I filled up my car this morning and my car usually would cost about $50-$55 to fill. It cost me $85 today to fill.
So that's $30 more.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, especially for people. I mean,
if you were driving to work and back every day, you'd need to fuel your car every week. That's $30 a week just on fuel in your car.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. I mean, for people who have to drive every day.
I drive a little Hyundai, so, you know.
People in big cities like Sydney and Brisbane and Melbourne and Perth. Perth's just a big town. But people in these cities often have to drive to the western suburbs if you look at Sydney or Melbourne. And that's a long way to go.
Yep.
just to get to work, and then you got the road tolls as well, and now you've got the petrol prices reaching between 250 and 280 in the greater Sydney area. I mean,
and of course, these floods that we're having at the moment, or that you guys are having down there at the moment, we've had here earlier this year. What where's flooding is the areas that grow crops for the cities, and so there's a shortage of food, which puts the prices up, which also increases inflation. So it's
a chain effect. It's a chain effect.
It's just a disaster on every level.
I just want to mention to our listeners in Europe and North America, you already know this, but our listeners on FM in Australia may not. The current interest rate in the UK is 0.75% as of March 2022. Then it was moved up to 1%, which is interesting, on May 5th. In America, in the USA, 0.75% up to 1%. Same thing. Isn't that interesting? Like, and you know, here we are at 135. We're still kind of, and the RBA is not finished. are they?
I would predict within about a 12, they'll be at least one full percentage point higher within 12 months, at least, easily.
I mean, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. We talked about 1991. 1992, when
18% interest rates.
Yeah, ridiculous at the time. But as I mentioned, houses were a lot cheaper. But, you know, this is kind of crazy what's going on, because the banks are just going to carry this, not carry it. They're going to pass it on, Adam.
Oh, absolutely. I'm surprised that they haven't announced that they're passing it all on.
I thought they already. I thought they would have done it 30 seconds after the Reserve Bank of Australia announced it, you know.
Yeah, I was expecting the chairman of the Reserve Bank to end his speech by saying, and so that's why interest rates are going up today, and now I'd like to hand you over to the banks to let you know when you'll be paying more.
Well, you know, we've got to go soon. At the end of the day, do you feel positive about life with all these disastrous things we're talking about, between floods, interest rates, Ukraine, all that stuff?
Look, Henry, I'm mostly an optimistic positive person by nature. So, you know.
Is that right? Well, I've known you for 30 years. Come on, Adam. No, I agree with you. You have been, indeed.
You know, I consider I live a blessed life. I've got a great partner. I've got a good home that I've got quite a small mortgage on. So, you know, the interest rates aren't that important to me at this point. But I absolutely think that a lot of what's wrong in Australia in particular can be fixed, and a lot of how to get that fixed was getting rid of the previous government.
We did that.
And now, that wasn't an endorsement of the Albanese government. It was just a simple case of anyone but that government.
Yeah. It was a dangerous situation to be in, and that had to change.
Yeah.
And that's a positive for sure.
You know, the governmental corruption has to end, the scandals have to end, the rorts have to end. And I'm reasonably confident that Albanese is the man to be able to do that. If he can do it in one term or not, I don't know. So we'll have to wait and see there. But it's just, you know, I still remain an optimist. I still think that, you know, I'd rather be alive than dead at this point.
Well, yes, because you don't believe in the afterlife, right?
No.
Or Jesus or any of that stuff. Just before we go, I just want to talk about Albanese in the Ukraine, and he met Zelensky, right?
Zelensky, President, yes.
It's interesting. I kept on wondering if his partner, who he's not married, but he's got a partner for many years, if he left her in Europe, in other parts of Europe, as in France. And it turns out he did. Can you imagine what she was thinking when her boyfriend, basically, was in the most dangerous country in the world, in Kiev?
Yeah, well, she was in tears when he left.
Was she?
Yes. So, you know, she was obviously concerned, obviously distressed by him going there. I think he should have gone there. I think it's a good thing that he went
there. Me too. Because he did have to think, well, it's not him, you see, it's all his security advisors.
It's the security measures that are needed to get him in there. Because, of course, the last thing we want is for him to become a target. and
or a or a martyr for that matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. So, you know, it is an incredibly risky situation to put a politician into, especially a leader in there.
Yeah.
Particularly a leader. Like, Australia's been one of the largest contributors of weaponry.
Outside
of the U.S. And NATO.
But outside NATO, yeah.
Which is predominantly the U.S.
yes, let's face it.
So, you know, he would be a target if Russia had have known where he was when he was going to be there.
I wonder how they do this stuff, Adam. Like, you know, other world leaders, Macron, other world leaders have gone to Kyiv. And yes. I'm just wondering how they organize the security. These are world leaders. If the Kremlin got to them and killed one of them, or many of them at the same time, because it was multiple world leaders, this would be a major, you know, success for Putin.
Absolutely.
How do they do it?
It would, absolutely, without any hesitation or doubt, escalate the situation into a world war.
Yes, and this is something that particularly America, Britain and Australia don't want, because we've been involved in too many world wars, and it would just cause destruction of the planet, and nukes would get involved. So I see where they're going with this stuff.
Mm. So they have to play a fine line. Mm. But they have to be seen to be supporting Ukraine.
Mm.
And that's why it's important that our leaders go there and get those pictures out so that, you know, Russia can see. Well, because Putin would have been... I could only imagine that Putin is furious every time the world media is washed by photos of another leader in Kiev with... what's his name?
Zelensky.
Zelensky, that's it. Mm. I was thinking Zelensky, and I knew that was wrong.
I don't know. They're kind of the same. It's funny, Vladimir and Vladimir are such similar first names for both presidents. But anyway, look, Adam, we got to go. I think this is going to be a long war in Ukraine. And we're just going to have to go through this. Last thoughts?
Look, I said at the beginning of this war, if we want to limit the loss of innocent lives and we want to end this as quickly as possible, the best way to do that is to take out Putin and to take out Russia. Bomb Moscow, bomb the presidential palaces, bomb their military sites, bomb their communication sites.
But that would be a world war, wouldn't it?
How else are we going to end this? Putin isn't going to back down and walk away.
Well, the guy's a lunatic anyway. So.
Yeah, we're not dealing with a rational person.
No.
You can't rationalize with an irrational person.
No.
So, you know, all we're doing here is sitting here, spinning our wheels, trying to defend as much as we can in the Ukraine, and meanwhile, innocent people every day are dying.
A lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, and look at the impact it's having globally. You know, our interest rates are rising because of that war.
Everything.
Because of what Putin is doing.
And our food prices. I mean, it's not just... I know we've got all these, you know, these issues in Australia with floods and stuff.
And such and so forth. But a lot of fuel, it is everything. What's happening in Europe.
Yeah. Okay, Adam, it's so good to talk to you. Thank you for spending so much time with me here on Bondi Tunes once again.
It's always a pleasure, Henry, and we will talk again soon.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is... Real Radio.
Your good friend around the planet, Bondi Tunes International.
sun never sets on the Nightunes.